Hi, this is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Randy Sofuto of Randy and Rainbows, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Mike, love you.
Love you too, man.
Hi, this is Jimmy Gallagher of The Passions, and you're listening to the Harmony Street Show with Mike Miller.
Hello, this is Carl Gardner from The Coasters. We're listening to the Harmony Street Show with Mike Miller.
Hi, this is Larry Chance of the Earls, and you're listening to, oh yeah, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah!
Thank you, Larry. Very, very cool.
Hi, this is Jay Siegel of the Tokens, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
This is Harry Kane from Jay and the Americans. You're listening to the Harmony Street Show with Mike Miller.
Thank you very much, Howie.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street Show. I'd like to introduce my special guest, Miss Dee Dee Kinnebrew, original founding member of the Crystals. Hi, Dee. How are you?
I'm fine. Recuperating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. Lately, at my age, I'm always recuperating from something. So, you know.
Yeah.
You know how it is. And just let me say that it was my pleasure actually working with you and the Crystals. I had the pleasure of being asked to sing first tenor for J.T. Carter's Crests up in St. Petersburg and Nova. And let me tell you that I saw three young girls on stage, and I know that the new Crystals are of another vintage, but let me tell you, you look fabulous up there. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard that before.
You know what? I never used to say, well, I don't know what made me, but we never used to say that, you know, well, there's an original member or whatever, but so many people through the years have started saying, well, she's not an original member.
Right.
I just started saying, well, I better make an announcement because there are so many phony groups out there trying to be this or trying to say they're that I just started making the announcement.
No, you know, I know what you're saying. I mean, it's become political, and really, to me, it's all about the music, and really and truly, through this music, I've met so many wonderful people. I mean, and that goes for singers who support each other, and fans who come to see it. The people that actually come to see this music, you can have in the audience the CEO of a corporation, the guy that painted your house, the guy that fills your gas tank, and they're all sitting and they have one common bond, and that's the music. And I think it's wonderful.
Well, I do too. And we even get some young kids, which we had a kid in Alaska, I think it was in Ketchikan the last week.
Right.
And he was 9. He said that was his first concert, and he just loved it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you, these songs are getting the second generation because, you know, there were the children of the people that grew up with this music, and they still play the music.
As well. He was there with his grandmother.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, that's funny because you did tell me that you were in Alaska actually last week. Now, what do you think? You think Sarah's an oldies fan?
I doubt it. He's probably a country and western fan.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense to me. Okay, let's talk more about the Crystals right now. So you started actually at about age 15. You started early on, right?
Started early on, yeah.
You know, and I did read somewhere that you went to school with Gregory Hines and Bernadette.
That was in
Peters.
High school, yeah.
Yeah.
When I first started, I was going to a school in Brooklyn called Wingate.
You had some pretty good people around you.
Oh, yeah. I had never even seen a show till I was on it.
Wow.
That's, show, I was on it.
That's amazing.
And so once, what happened, we went into the studio in May.
Right.
Right after the girls' prom, in fact.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
It's true. They came in their dresses still, straight from the prom.
Unbelievable.
To the studio, which was Mirror Sound over in, it was on 46th Street.
Wow.
Back of the Hotel America.
Uh-huh.
Straight back there. I remember Nipsey Russell was sitting in the phone booth. They had phone booths back
then. Wow, Nipsey. Oh, yeah.
And he came into the session and obviously knew Phil. And
wow.
He went back there. We recorded the song, Both Sides, that evening.
Right.
And left. And I didn't think any more about it until I came up from school around October and put on the, I think it was the WMCA Good Guys.
Right.
Or something that afternoon, I don't remember, and there was the record playing. I was shocked.
Isn't it great when you hear it back?
Yeah, but we didn't know what to expect. We were kids. And so the first place they called us was the Apollo to have a show.
Wow.
Yep. So we did the show there.
Scary.
After that, we started calling the shows because the record was moving, and thanks to Jerry Blavitt, who picked the right side, because Phil had picked the other side.
The geeter with the heater.
His side, that's right. Mm. And he says, I told Phil, if you had a set of ears, you would know that the hit is the other side, not the side. And he would play the side that Phil wanted. He was always been independent.
Yeah.
And he played, and good he did. He picked There's No Other instead of Oh Yeah, Maybe Baby, and the thing was a big hit.
Uh-huh. Now, I heard somewhere that actually There's No Other was written as an up-tempo tune, and,
it was.
They slowed it down, yeah.
It was called He's All Right. It wasn't even called There's No Other.
Wow.
The hook, There's No Other Like My Baby. But it was up-tempo, and with the chorus was called He's All Right.
Wow.
Guest time on American Bandstand, and I have had the distinct pleasure of traveling many, many thousands of miles with these young ladies as we go about the country making personal appearances. They've got a brand new record. Ladies and gentlemen, let's greet the Crystals.
Let me ask you another question. Is it true that the name The Crystals came from Crystal Bates, Leroy Bates' daughter?
Little girl. We were trying to figure out, of course, before the record came out, we're trying to figure out what name we should give ourselves.
Wow.
And so we're sitting around, and Crystal was there, because Leroy Bates is a little girl.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, let's call ourselves Crystals, and I'm going to tell you why I picked Crystals. I thought it was mature. You know, we were doing a lot of rehearsing of, like, jazz-type harmonies and stuff like
that.
I saw us going into clubs. And, you know, like those days, they had supper clubs. So I didn't want a name that sounded like the so-and-so and the so-and-so or whatever. I wanted something that sounded more mature that could, like, last.
Right.
And that people could remember. Maybe it was too memorable because there's, like, so much Crystal now. But that's why we picked, that was why I thought Crystal would have been a good name, because it sounded, like, mature and not like a bunch of little kids that got together, although we were on the street corner and sang, which we never did. You know, we were specifically put together to be a singing group by our first manager, Benny Wells.
Right.
Who taught us, you know, to do harmonies and to do intricate harmonies.
Right.
And so that's, like I said, because we were doing Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross type stuff.
Right.
We saw those days you kind of aspired to have a long career if you thought about it. So you wanted to go into, like, the Boulevard and the Town and Country and all the big clubs, and you had to play to mature audiences, so you didn't want a childish. I didn't think we wanted a childish sounding name. So Crystal,
right?
The Crystals. That's all. That's good.
Right.
And so that's really. But wish I would like to see her today, but I haven't seen her since she was probably four at that time.
Wow. Well, you mean so? Well, we'll have to Google her, or you know, Zaba search. That's the one.
Couldn't find her. Yeah.
She's around. You know, I'm sure she's around.
Yeah.
You know, but I'll tell you, the name is important at the beginning, but then, you know, no matter what the name is, if you have a great sound and your harmonies are intricate, then it seems to fly, because I'm a vocal arranger also, you know, as well as, you know, a lead vocalist and the whole thing, and I'm very, very particular about how tunes start and how they end and how tight they are and to sing it right, because a lot of guys on the street corner, you know, they'll just get together and they sing what they hear, you know, and myself being a guitar player, many times I sat there and I said, well, here's the chord, let's tear it down,
right?
And they'd be singing whatever and I'd say it's not in the chord, but
right.
That's what we sang on the street corner. I'm saying, but it's this chord, it's not there. You know, you want it right.
Right, you want it right. And our manager, Benny Wells, was a saxophone player, sax player, like big bands. And so he could play a little piano, and he taught us by piano how to, you know, find it. And he loved doing things like that, really
right.
Intricate harmonies, and we loved doing it because it was all new to us, you know. And so basically that's right. He really taught us how to sing it together for about a year.
Right.
Develop an ear for what you're hearing.
Well, you know, vocal groups, you could take the greatest singers in the world and bring them into a room, and you could take, three or four good singers, and it takes time for them to think together and breathe together and become actually get a vocal sound, you know, because the blend is, you know, you have to listen to the blend in order to be a tight vocal group. It's not just about having good singers in the room.
That's right.
You know.
Right. Because you have to sing together.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of times, because I can remember over the years, I had my group Harmony Street. I had three ladies in the group, which, you know, I kind of died and went to heaven. They were all, you know, three good singers. And, you know, sometimes they would say to me, but we can't hear the monitors. And I would say, just act as if. Go by how it feels. And, you know, and you'll be fine, because you know how it is. Sound men can make you or break you.
Oh, I remember Gladys Knight saying that the best thing I can have on my staff is a good sound man. And
yeah.
I said, she was my favorite singer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, who's better than she is? I mean, you know, she just, because she's got so much soul that she's got enough to go around, and she's got enough to give you and me and still have a lot left, you know.
Quality, and that's something you either have or don't have. That's just, she has a good tone quality to her voice. Sometimes people can do all kind of gymnastics with their voice, but have that quality of tone, that richness of round sound we used to call a round sound. It's just full. It's not, you know, she may not hit the highest note, but when she hits her notes, they are full.
Oh, yeah. You know, it reminds me, if you remember the comedian Franklin Ajayi. Okay, he used to be at the Apollo also, and he used to do this in the middle of his routine. And Richard Pryor did this one too. I think Franklin stole it from him. But he would go up, and he would backpedal, and then he would go, woo, woo. And then he would say, leave in, and he would spin around, and then he would go, on a train. And he would say, okay, you know, what's that? And everybody would say, I don't know. And he would go, one pip. Because he would do the choreography all by himself. It was pretty funny. Because you remember how together they were as you know, with dancing.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know. So let's move on with the Crystals. From that particular hit, you know, at an early age, then we get to the tune Uptown, which was Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil.
Yeah. Gosh. We always wanted to do more R&B stuff.
Right.
But Phil wasn't having that. He knew what he wanted to go for, and when we heard the song, we didn't particularly like it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and I'll tell you another thing. It took us 1 week to do that song.
Wow.
I'm like, the first song took like 3 hours.
Right.
Both sides. Now we're doing a week to do one song. He
right.
was so particular about every little thing.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, he's spending our money so he can take a week to do it. Because
right.
Be logged back to us. Little did we know.
Oh, wow.
And the cost, you know.
Yeah.
But why it took a week, I don't know. But anyway, the girls love singing that song because the harmonies, they like the harmonies on the background of that song.
Yeah.
He gets up each morning and he goes downtown. where everyone's his boss and he's lost in an angry land. He's a little man, but then he comes up town each evening to my tenement, up town where folks don't have to pay much rent. And when he's there with me, he can see that he's everything. He don't get no breaks, and he takes all they've got to give, 'cause he's got to live. But then he comes uptown where he can hold his head up high. Uptown he knows that I'll be standing by, and when I take his hand, there's no man who can put him down. The world is sweet, it's at his feet when he's uptown.
And then, you know, as most people know, and some people don't know, I mean, you know, there was some mystery going on, you know, with the crystals, and nobody really knows the true story. I mean, you hear people say, well, you know, I think, you know, they had this singer on this song and not and whatever. I mean, I've worked with Lala Brooks, and actually you and I had a talk up in St. Petersburg, and you said that, you know, that you had brought Lala into the group at that time.
My mom had. She went to the school, junior high school, where my mother was going.
I see.
My mother worked at PS 73.
Uh-huh.
She used to rehearse at PS 73 because Benny Wells, our manager, lived in that area with Ocean Hill, Brownsville. We lived all in different areas of Brooklyn. And so when one girl was leaving, Lala was not on the first record.
Right.
It was a girl named Myrna Gerard was leaving to get married.
Gotcha.
And when Myrna Gerard left, whom I just saw.
Oh, no kidding.
The first time since the 60s. She left, and we wanted a fifth voice.
Right.
Brought in Lala Brooks.
Uh-huh.
Because my mother said, there's a kid around here that really sings well. I heard her.
Wow.
I guess they had a talent show, so she's a good singer. So we went to her mom's house and with her and asked her mother. We heard her.
Mm-hmm.
Listened to her, you know, because we used to rehearse at 73. Came and listened to her, said, oh, yes, she's got a good, strong voice. So we went around there. They didn't have a phone, and we went to her mother's house to ask her.
Wow.
She joined the group, and she said yes. Because she was doing a single with people called Peggy and Bob or something.
Uh-huh.
She was just 14 at the time.
Well, I've done a lot of shows with Lala, and did she have, I guess she didn't have the afro then, but, you know, her hair is as wild as her personality. I certainly could not categorize her as being laid back.
Oh, no. Even at 14, she wasn't.
Yeah.
They always label me the spitfire because I'd speak up.
Uh-huh.
Lala would get you to speak up for it. She'd tell you, and then she'd lay back like she didn't do anything.
Uh-huh, I see. In other words, she
didn't mind taking the heat.
In other words, she'd make noises in class and then point to the guy next to her when the teacher.
Uh-huh. Well, it wasn't me.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
No, I could actually see that. So let's talk about the tune, He Hit Me.
Gosh, we hated that.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss. He hit me, but it didn't hurt me. He couldn't stand to hear me say that I'd been with someone new. He hit me.
But one thing Phil would do, so it never appeared that he had a flop, was as soon as he put a song out, if there was any kind of flack, like there was flack on that one, he hit me. He pulled it right off.
No kidding.
Okay, then he had another one called Almost Grown.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think was the first one that Lala led.
Right.
Pulled that right off, didn't do a thing, because Barbara Alston was the original lead singer.
Right.
And, in fact, Benny Wells was her uncle. And he wanted to stick with the formula that he had.
I see.
Which was Barbara as the lead singer. You know, she had the sweet, kind of laid-back, lazy kind of voice.
Right.
And that's what sold There's No Other, and that's what he wanted to keep with Uptown, and she did most of the first album leads on that. But we switched up, and he put her on. We had to beg him because we felt Lala was our strongest singer.
Right.
But you know how they are. That
right.
They want to use the one, the formula that they have. So he finally used her on Almost Grown Nothing, All Grown Up Nothing.
Well, I'm all grown up.
Right.
Put out, but he would pull it off right away to make sure, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, Phil, I met Phil years ago. I actually met him in Great Neck, Long Island, and he was doing some things. And that's when I met Sonny. And Sonny actually was doing some percussion on some of the Ronettes stuff at that time.
Well, yeah, if you were in the studio, he'd give you a cowbell or something.
Yeah, you know, and because his name is listed on a couple of the albums, Sonny Bono Percussion.
Sonny was there to learn.
Yeah.
And he was the gopher.
Yeah, I knew that. He, as a matter of fact...
He was all ears, and he was listening.
And he learned because, you know, I actually met Cher at that time, too, you know, when Sonny had just kind of brought her in. But he really did, like a fly on the wall, learn an awful lot. I had the opportunity to go into a lot of really big sessions because of the people I knew. And just sitting there and by osmosis, you learn. You know, and I guess Sonny did, and, you know, he was...
I think Sonny's intent was to learn.
Oh, yeah.
While he was there. Whichever way he could get in it, he got in, and he did learn. And,
unbelievable.
For him. And, you know, Phil did not want to record Cher, but he didn't like her voice, couldn't sing. Look at it. She lasted way longer than he ever did.
Do you know that Cher, you know, because we saw Cher in Vegas, Paulette and I, a couple of months ago. She was so over the top. I could not believe how she looked. I could not believe how she sounded. And the show was just a fantastic show. It was amazing. And a lot of people don't know. There's a very short list of people who have won an Emmy, an Oscar, a Tony, and a Grammy. Streisand is one. Cher is one. And there's only two or three others. So, you know, you got to give it to Cher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I always liked a lot of her stuff.
Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, and of course, she's done some what I call throwaway tunes, you know, to album fillers and whatever. But,
right.
You know, Cher is Cher. I mean, you know, she's gone through the changes, but she's still around. I'll give you one that's very interesting. There was a girl who lived in one of my father's buildings in the Bronx. My father built buildings all over the Bronx when he was alive. And one of the girls that lived in one of the buildings was a girl by the name of Shirley Elliston.
Uh-huh.
And Shirley lived in that building. And I know that when Lincoln Chase, you know, Lincoln, you know, from the name game, when he passed away, her career kind of went down. And, you know, as a lot of the performers are coming back and doing revival stuff and a lot of shows, I, the other day, said to myself, I wonder what happened to Shirley. And I kind of put my feelers out, but nobody seems to know where Shirley Ellis is. And, you know, I just wonder, you know, some people just fall by the wayside.
Well, yeah, and she did have another one besides Name Game.
The Nitty Gritty.
nitty-gritty.
Right.
But, you know, some women just opt out because they get burnt in the business, and they just don't want any part of it. And I've known people that have done that. It's just they've been ripped and walked over, robbed, and stunned enough that they just get married, have kids, and say, I don't want you can have it. They don't have the stomach for it.
It's a cruel business. I mean, listen, I lived in Danbury, Connecticut for years, and I used to see Ronnie Spector all the time, and I became friendly with them. And I think I told you in the dressing room up at the show, I had some demos that Ronnie had cut that Media Sound owned, and a friend of mine, Phil Schrager, was a recording engineer. He had them. He gave them to me, and I gave them actually to Ronnie and John, and you know, Ronnie was telling me that she tried to get back with the original Ronettes, and they tried to have a reunion or whatever, and she said after about 20 minutes, you know, they started getting into all the old stuff, all the little fighting and the little innuendos that...
And isn't that awful?
And it went down the same way, like, okay, see ya. You know, it's amazing how that works. Let's talk about Darlene Love for a little bit. It's amazing to me because, you know, I also worked with Darlene on a couple of shows, and people talk and they don't really know. They say, well, you know, who really did this tune? Who really did that tune?
You know,
maybe you can enlighten me.
What I say to that is, if you have something that really bothers you, would you want somebody to say, well, let's talk about that for the world?
Yeah, no, I understand. That's why, you know, I know that it's kind of a gray and mysterious area as far as what was what and who was who.
But something could be left a mystery.
Yeah, okay, well, that's cool. And I think it's probably better off.
I was asked to do a show by the people who did the Doo-Wop 51.
Right.
Okay, let's go. I'm going to give you a prime example.
Okay.
Club 51.
Okay.
We did that show.
Right.
Was the original group broke up back in the 60s. Okay, about 66. That was the end of the last of Lala, me,
right,
and another girl named Fran.
Gotcha.
Okay. Two of the originals and myself got back together. The end of that was early in the year. The end of that year,
right,
the middle of that year,
uh-huh,
we went and we met up again.
Right.
Through happenstance, Barbara was doing something and been asked to do something in a recording studio. I ran into her, and the guys asked me, would you do backup for her? Well, sure. She
right.
had gone, you know, not that long. And then I got a hold of Mary, one of the other original girls who went to school with Barbara, and we did backup for her. And before we knew it, the three of us were back together again.
Right.
So we started working together, and then Richard Nader did a show over in... the garden. I was in the islands at that time.
Right.
Married at that time.
Right.
Came back and said, would you all get Lala and do the show at the garden? So we did. But of course, by now, prior to that, she had become a Sunni Muslim.
Oh, okay.
So she became a Muslim.
Right.
And changed her name. And her husband didn't particularly want her to work. I think she had a little boy at that time.
Uh-huh. Born.
And she was Sakina Muhammad. So that meant she had to wear a dress up to the neck, sleeves down to the wrist.
Uh-huh. I got you.
So I'm like, okay, we can do this show, but we can't do any more. That's the only, she's the only one with the dress on. We all have worn long.
Unless you guys all wore the outfit, then, you know, it would have looked pretty uniform.
No, we, I mean, she always dressed, you know, it was a nice dress, but
right.
it was a turtleneck.
Yeah, I got you.
Down dress. And I'm like, okay. That's not going to really work.
Right.
Anyway, her husband didn't want it to work because Muslim men want their women home.
Okay.
Did the one show, and then the three of us, myself, Mary, and Barbara, continued on, and we worked for years together.
Right.
Until Barbara had two children at that point, and her kids were getting, you know, we would go away for 5 weeks. We used to do long stints at that time. And it
right.
was easy. The kids were complaining, and Barbara says, well, you've got to replace me.
Mm-hmm.
So we replaced Barbara. We came back from England. Barbara says, I'm out. This is my kids are not happy, and I have to stay home.
I hear you. Yeah.
And Mary, this is what usually happens with women. It's the kids. The fathers can go away, but the mothers have to kind of...
No, I understand.
And Mary, who never thought she could have children because she were in our early 30s at that point, got pregnant and got sick right away at the first beginning. So Johnny, well, that was her husband, pulled her out. Mm-hmm. So that was the end of that, so I had to replace her.
Oh.
But then there's me. I'm the only one left. So all through the years, and I mean, it was some lean years.
Right.
I kept the group going, changing girls. She left. Mary left. And that
right.
left me to keep, you know, to keep the group going. So I always got, I had replaced one at a time and just kept it going. And what happened was eventually I found some girls that clicked that worked with me for like 12 years,
15
years, and we were together quite a long time. Then Lala Brooks,
right,
at the time, Sakina Mohammed, took her family, her boys went to school, she wanted them to go to Muslim school, she sent them over to England. The girls, her two boys are the oldest, the girls were younger, and she decided, I'm not sending the girls, I'm going over with them. So she rented out her place in Teaneck, New Jersey, where she was living, and she went over to England to live so her girls would go to Muslim school. Then her husband, who was a jazz performer, drummer, went to live in Germany, or Austria, his partner.
I read that she was in Austria for a while, yeah.
That's because her husband was a jazz drummer, and he made his partner was, and that's where they moved their business to Austria. So the girls, they all moved to Austria. So, I mean, she's come to shows where when we played in England like
right.
that, and I talked to her occasionally, but very, very seldom.
Right.
So now we're going down 40 years almost that she hasn't been in the group.
Yeah.
And then she decides the kids get grown. She and her husband are breaking up. They move back to the, she moves back to the United States.
Right.
And she starts singing again, but I've already got girls who have been here like 16 years. So,
right.
You know, there's just not enough room for me to get rid of them or whatever. I just want it anyway.
No, I hear you.
And so then T.J. Lubinsky and Henry called me about 3 months ago. This is an example of what happens. And it's not just with me.
When you say Henry, you mean Henry DeLuca.
Henry DeLuca and T.J. Lubinsky call me and they say, we want to do the show again. I said, well, okay. But we want you to go and get Lala. I said, well, why would I want to do that?
Right.
What am I supposed to do with the girls who have been with me for years?
Right.
You know? Well, comes back later. Well, I'll tell you what. You do two songs, and she'll do two songs. And I said, you know what?
Uh-huh.
Not going to do any.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to do, I says, because that's not going to work for me.
Uh-huh.
I said, the first thing that people are going to say, sentimental, well, why don't you all get back together? I said, it's not going to work.
Right.
It's not going to work. Number one, the people that are with me are much, much more loyal.
Yeah.
Much, much, you know, they're strong singers as well. They've been with me. You don't just throw people away. And I said, well, you started out together. I said, we were kids.
Yeah.
Roebuck started with Sears, too.
Business is business. I know.
You just don't do that. I said, and what's that going to do for me?
Yeah.
What's it going to do for Arlene Smith? I said, all that happened was the Chantels came back after they got retirement checks for their jobs.
Right.
And now they're taking jobs away that she, who's been here all the time.
I agree.
I said, so what good is that going to do me? Well, we want to have it that way. I said, well, you do what you want to do.
I said,
but, you know, a long time ago, and going back to the bogus groups.
Right.
I said, I trademarked that name because people had a little bit more class about themselves, and they would not go out and say, I sang this song when.
Right.
They weren't even maybe born, or they might have been two or three.
Oh, I know how political and how crazy it is out there because
that's not political. That is just lies.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always been one who's been outspoken, and I will take the heat. I won't tell you a lie, but I will tell you. I'm not afraid to say what it is.
Right.
You know, if it doesn't suit me to tell you, I won't tell you. Some things I just is not going there.
Okay.
Okay. But the bottom line is, you have to think business. If you're in business, and people know about the show, but people know about the business. So many groups that are separated where there's two original members who have two different groups. That's the reason, is because they're not able to work together. And if one decides after so many years to come back, they don't take them back because, number one, they might, like you said with the Ronettes, they have differences.
Right.
They're family. You have to be able to live and work with these people on the road because you're very, very close. Many times you're only around each other.
Right.
Around the audience for a minute. But many audiences, I can understand people want to go back, but a lot of times it's just not feasible business-wise to do that.
I understand. You know, there were two types of groups. I mean, you yourself know that you've been, you know, in shows with groups where they're fighting like dogs in the dressing room and they don't talk to each other. When they get on stage, they dance and smile together. And when they get off, they go their separate ways. And then some who kiss and hug. So, you know, that's the deal.
And those I have to take my hat off to. You know why? Because it's not easy.
Oh, yeah.
Live with people.
Getting back to the whole PBS T.J. Lubinsky thing, I mean, when you look at how many groups he had to blend together, because, you know, you had the two Tokens groups with Jay Siegel and the Margaux Brothers.
Oh, my goodness.
You had Passions. You had the two Randy and the Rainbows. You had Mystics going on. You had, I mean, you know, so, you know, as everybody goes their separate ways, you know, it's this and that. I mean, no, look, I know Billy Godwin, you know, of the Ink Spots, and, you know, there were 16 Ink Spots groups. I just spoke to Herb Reed's manager, and, you know, gosh knows how many Platters groups there are. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. But what can you do? That's why I went and trademarked the name, and I think Lala resented the fact that I did, but I'm like, you were gone almost 40 years.
I agree.
What am I supposed to do? Let somebody go and trademark it, and then the next thing I know, I've got to fight 20 different crystal groups?
Yeah.
I didn't need anybody's permission. Everybody left of their own accord, you know?
Well, what a lot of those people are doing, and I think it's probably the right thing to do, they call themselves so-and-so of, you know, like to go and say, I'm Lala Brooks, you know, of the Crystals, or formerly of the Crystals, or, you know, that kind of thing.
The 60s was a long time ago, and I know everybody would love to go back there. I would probably like, well, I might not want to go back. But it's a long time ago, and people want to reminisce, and they want things to be like they were. But they have to realize it's a business just like any other business.
Right.
You know, and you have to be able to work with people and live with them, and it's a very close, you know, living, and you just have to really blend. I did a girl that works with me. You know her.
Right.
Lisa Grant.
When I went to interview her,
okay,
because
the girl was leaving, and I'm looking for a new girl. The girl was leaving. She was getting married, and so she says, well, I'm going to be getting married, and she wanted to have a couple of kids because she wasn't any baby, and she was, you know, on her biological clock. So she says, but I have a girl for you, because I've been very lucky with some of the girls that I've had through the years. They will always not only help me find a girl when they have to leave, they will train her for me. So she says, I'm gonna send you this girl that goes to my church. I said, okay. So I met Melissa at the over on Broadway at Starbucks or something.
Right.
Okay, then we went downstairs and we talked, and she's all ready to sing for me, wondering like, when are we gonna go into the studio so she can hear me? And then we talked for about an hour, and I says, okay, well, you got the job. And she was like, she told me later, she said, that's the strangest interview I've ever had. And I know what I told her. I said, well, let me tell you, I know the girl who recommended you could sing, and she would not send me a person that couldn't sing.
Right.
I wanted to see where your head was and if you were a nut, because I don't care what you sound like.
I got you.
And travel and work with you.
I got to live with you.
I got to live with you. So I wanted to get a feel for what type of person she is. And that's something that a lot of people, and I can understand it, really don't understand, is that you are closer than family sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you spend that much time with people, you know, getting dressed and singing and rehearsing, it becomes almost like a spiritual experience. Plus, you're on stage relying on each other, you know, to hold up the harmony, and you're doing, it's a really cooperative effort. So you become very attached to these people.
Very attached.
You know.
Very attached.
I know.
You have to really have somebody that you can work with and live with. And when I say live, and you have to give each other space.
Tell me about Phil Spector.
Oh, gosh. You know, when we first met him, he probably, now thinking about it, was all of like 22, 23 years old.
Right.
And he did not have a record company. He was, I guess, like a freelance writer. We met him up at Hill and Range one night. Benny Wells, our manager, and the five of us, the original first were Mary, Barbara, Pat, me, and Myrna. And we're rehearsing this song, He's All Right.
Right.
There's No Other. And it was an up-tempo, and Benny's playing, and we're there rehearsing, like I said, up at Hill and Range at the Brill Building one evening about 7 o'clock. This guy walks in, opens the door, says, introduces himself, who he is, and he asked us to sing the song again. And so we sang it for him. He said he was a writer, producer, and so he said, now slow it down. He slowed it down, and he says, are you all interested in recording? Well, of course, that's what we're interested in.
Yeah. Where do I stand?
Yes.
Tell me where to stand.
Took us in the studio a few weeks later, recorded There's No Other, and I think it was on the other side was, oh yeah, Maybe Baby.
Right.
Thank you.
perfectly fine. He was a little kooky.
Yeah.
He wasn't crazy, and he wasn't, yeah. I would never say the man was a mean man. He was not mean to us, but then again, he didn't have his own record label at that time.
Right.
He got that record label, and that record was a hit. And then he got another hit. He became beside himself.
Uh-huh.
He was like, I'm all of that, and you are nothing, and
it's
all about me. But he never was mean to us because, see, he hadn't achieved all of that success at that point.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really went to his head. I think he had access to grind.
Yeah.
He had tried to be a singer himself, which I didn't know until after this.
Well, they say he was very shy in high school and nobody paid attention. And then when he put the Teddy Bears together and they had the hit and whatever, it was kind of like an I'll show you kind of a thing. And,
yes.
And he aspired, you know. But
yeah. But we liked him fine. He never was mean to us.
Uh-huh.
You know, he got a little cocky and nasty
right.
with a couple of his comments, but he was a funny guy.
Right, right.
You know, he would say little funny things. And like I said, he was young and we were young and we didn't know what to expect, you know. But he never was, like, crazy with us.
Yeah, because I know, one-on-one with Ronnie sitting at the Windmill Diner in Danbury, she told me some things that kind of made my head spin around. And I said, well, okay, you know, that's between you and him and whatever. And then there were money issues. And, you know, I think...
I'm not going to pay anybody. That
yeah.
really caused the group to break up. And
yeah.
that's what a lot of people don't realize. They'll try to do one against the other.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you the lead singer. I'm going to do this for you.
Right.
But, you know, we need to get rid of this one because this one may be the one that's telling everybody, look, we need to walk because we haven't gotten paid.
Right.
So and so and so and so. So they do that divide and conquer thing. Oh, they have all kinds of interests. That's why I said probably Shirley Ellis left the business because
there's
so much backbiting and people that you thought cared about you didn't care a thing about you. They were just there to use you.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I know that Lincoln Chase was her manager, and when he died, and you know, he was kind of her mentor. I think she didn't know what to do about it. But you know, I mean, she had a couple of hits. I know people that had you know just one hit, and they're still trying to hang on and come around and whatever. So,
if people really like that one hit and they want to see him, they'll come out to see them sing that one hit.
Most of the people out there, you know. A quick story about Jimmy Keys from the Chords. I had his kids. I was the dean for his kids also.
I was at his funeral.
Yes.
I didn't know him, but I went because my boyfriend at the time knew him.
I was supposed, and what a gentleman from the Bronx, the whole thing. And, you know, he died pretty much penniless, and he never really got his just due as so many people did. And people out there don't realize that all the money that was made by the Morris Levies and the record companies.
Money.
Yeah, and the groups just went out and, you know, they were on salary. And it shouldn't have been that way. It's different.
Well, and I remember, thank God, Phil never became our manager.
Yeah.
You know, he just was our record producer. But he didn't pay us for any of the songs.
Unbelievable.
He didn't pay us. That caused a lot of friction amongst the group. And
I
then when
imagine.
He tries the divide and conquer thing, you know, that caused friction amongst the group. So
wow.
You have animosities a lot of times that shouldn't have been. You cause people to start fighting, infighting. But basically wanted to keep all the money.
No, I understand. And, you know, it's a crime. Things are different now. I mean, you know, the music lawyers are the ones signing the groups. And
the lawyers
you know,
are now taking all of the money.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with that, you know. And now, you know, we talked about it the other day. I mean, how are you going to sell a record? I mean, people don't go to Sam Goody's anymore. They go on iTunes or they go on, you know, whatever, and they pay 99 cents and they download it. I mean,
you know what? That's the best way.
I guess.
And the record companies are crying. And you know what I say? Well, you know what? When you were
right.
stealing from us, you didn't mind then.
Right.
Now that people you're talking about, oh, they're stealing from, I said, how does it feel?
Uh-huh.
You know? How do you like it?
No, I understand that.
No. What are you going to do?
I happen to know that the Crystals actually recorded a couple of tunes early on that became hits by other people later. It's My Party, Chapel of Love, and some other tunes.
Well, It's My Party, but Carole King, who I was shocked when she became a singer.
Yeah.
Just used to, you know.
Yeah, because.
The songs,
right. She was a songwriter.
She was a songwriter. Anyway, what was I going to say?
As far as the...
My party was brought to us, it was a ballad. She hadn't finished... She hadn't even finished the verses.
Uh-huh.
So we were singing it as a ballad. We were rehearsing it. But we were working pretty steadily then, too. We were on the road a lot.
Right.
Quincy, I heard, and this is, doesn't have to be true, that Quincy Jones was approached by Leslie Gore's dad.
Right. Well, Well, they had some influence, as you know, because as Michael Gore is the songwriter, he's the one that's actually made the bigger contribution. But yes, Leslie had some pull.
Right. Her father, they had plenty of money. I think he owns a big foundation business.
Right.
Thing, and got in there and got that song recorded. That would have been our song.
So uh-huh.
We already started rehearsing. We also rehearsing Chains, which we didn't do. And we also started, were the first ones on our first album we did on Broadway. But it was a little different, of course, than Drifters did it. So, I mean, a lot of songs that we could have had people film those. So I said, if he knew so much, he'd have put us in there and we'd have gotten it.
Wow.
It is there too, as far as songs, you know.
I have a silly question.
Uh-huh.
How do you feel about the term doo-wop? Do you consider the Crystals a doo-wop group or a pop group? Because I know when I used to say doo-wop to Jimmy Keys, he said, "Hey man, we didn't sing doo-wop, we sang jazz." You know, and doo-wop kind of sticks to some of the early R&B groups, and it sticks to some of the Italian groups from Brooklyn. That had the bass singers and the silly riffs. But I'm just wondering if the
any songs that had any doo-wop in there.
Yeah, so in other words, the whole, as they say, pardon the phrase, girl group sound, it was actually a genre of its own.
I think so, too. And also, the girl groups didn't sound like each other. I don't think we sounded like the Martha and the Vandellas.
Right.
Martha and the Vandellas didn't sound like the Supremes.
I agree.
Didn't sound like the Marvelettes. Everybody had their own different sound. The Exciters had a sound. I mean, everybody sounded...
Right. Well, you know, let me tell you.
I said to someone once to go back to the doo-wop thing. I also said, you know what? How the heck did... We're younger than the Frank Sinatras and the Dean Martins.
Right.
Bless it. How the heck did we get to be oldies and they get to be classics?
Yeah, no, I...
Classic rock and roll, and they were classic pop or whatever they wanted to call it.
Right. Well, standards are standards. I mean, you know... look at how many Crystals tunes have been used in the movies. I mean, there's just a ton of them, and not very many groups can say that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
You know what? I thought there were... At the time, we wanted to sing more like Motown stuff.
Right.
Or like funky stuff, but Phil wanted to keep it kind of like... I guess, like he said, symphonies for young kids. So he wanted the big, big band and the big orchestra and the violins and the violas and the four pianos and this, which made it a lot different.
Right.
You know, and so I guess it stood, I'm still here, so I guess he was right and we were wrong when it came to choice material, you know. But we definitely wanted to do more R&B. How come we can't sing anything funky like some? We just didn't.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Where are the Crystals headed? Do you have any plans to do some more recording?
Well, actually, we're just getting ready to do... We did a live album in Asia.
Right.
And we're going to do... We've edited that, and we're going to be just, you know, seeing how that comes out. If we really have a lot of good response from it, we may take a couple of cuts from that. Actually, may go in the studio.
Wow.
We do them over and try to, you know, do it on... Because everything is done on the net nowadays. People don't go to stores anymore.
Well, you know...
Record-buying public is between the ages of 9 and maybe 14.
That's right. And even though the baby boomers go to shows, they really don't spend money on records now. Or, you know, I say records and albums. I always get corrected that, you know, records and albums went out a long time ago. It's not an album. And
an album, right? CDs. That's why you have your Hanna-Barberas.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And your young kids. Because the kids want somebody that sounds like kids.
You know, I said to somebody the other day, you can't turn a CD over. There's no flip side. You know.
But you don't need to.
Right. It's true. You know, and then I look, I remember Little Shop of Horrors paid homage because what did they have? They had the three girls that sang. Ronette.
I think it was Sherelle.
No, actually, it was Chiffon, Crystal, and Ronette, the three girls.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's paying homage to a group that was there and, is actually, royalty. I mean, you know, Dee Dee, I consider you, and, you know, I refrain from the word doo-wop, but, you know, you are royalty in the business because you were there on day one and you're still there representing the Crystals, you know, all through those years. So I applaud you in that respect. And I really pay homage to you for being the one to carry on the name. It's great.
And it wasn't easy, especially when that's what I was going to say early. When the British market came in, if you weren't British, you didn't get played hardly at all in America. It's like all of a sudden we decided, well, let's get everything back to England that we okay?
Right.
I mean, even now I look on television and I say, do we have any actors in America? Why are these people coming here?
Yeah.
Just love the people that we threw their tea in the sea.
Yeah.
Threw their tea in the sea. I said, but now we can't give them enough if they're either Australian or English. Do they not have any actors here? You know? Or if the singers, I'm like, what did they do? They come over and take your stuff.
Uh-huh. No, I
and regurgitate it out, and all of a sudden theirs is better than yours. I'm like, we love giving stuff away. I don't know why. I don't get it.
No, I hear you. But, you know, the lineup right now, I mean, you know, I sang with you guys on two shows. My wife sat in the audience. I mean, you know, she loved it. I mean, you know, Patricia and Melissa and you, I mean, it's just, it's a great act. It's got a lot of energy. And, you know, Melissa, you know, she does some stuff vocally that, you know, just mesmerizes everybody.
She's a good girl.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, as I said, I didn't realize it, but, she looked at me, you know, when we were talking, she says, Mr. Miller? I says, yeah. She says, oh my goodness, you know, you were my teacher at PS 112 in the Bronx. I said, wow. How amazing is that? It's like a small world and it comes full circle, you know.
I actually ran into one of my biology teacher on the road one day.
Right.
I'll never forget her. I always loved her, Miss Salem. Red hair, green eyes.
Uh-huh.
And like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting at the pool and there she is and she's got her kids with her.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, you know, people don't consider teachers and deans and principals to be real people when they see them shopping in the store. Well, let me tell you, if I saw you walking down the street and you were walking towards me, you don't look a day over 40 in your picture or in person.
Oh, well.
So, and that's the truth. And that's you know, I'm not saying it just to hand you a lot of jive. That happens to be the truth. And if you don't believe me, come out and see Dee Dee and the Crystals. Is there anything that you want to say to Crystal fans?
I would just like to say to the Crystal fans that I love them. I'm surprised that they've kept me around so long. And people say, well, when were you going to retire? I said, well, as long as the people come out, I guess I'll keep going, you know. And I'm just really happy. And I do apologize that I don't have all the original girls, but people have lives and they just go on with them, you know. And it probably would have been nice. I take my hat off to the Four Tops for having stayed together so long.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you were there when you were 15 or 16 and you're still there. And, you know, that's really a credit. And there are not very many groups that can say that, because usually in most of the groups, people have, they come, they go, they come, they go, they're in, they're out, and it kind of reforms and it evolves. It's like an amoeba. It moves around. But you were there from day one and you're still there. And that's a credit to you.
Well, thank you. I actually was the first member.
Isn't that something?
That's something. Benny Wells went and got his niece. He took me and he took me from another group that he had. He was started me with four other girls and he said, nah, he saw those girls weren't going to be malleable.
Uh-huh.
And he took me out and he said he heard that his niece was singing, had been in a talent show and they came in, uh-huh. And that was Barbara Alston. And he went and she brought the three girls that she had and that was that became us until we met Leroy Bates and we found his uh-huh. sister-in-law
right.
who was Pat. But he actually took me out of that group, ended that group, and started another group. So I was there. And none of us knew each other, really.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait a minute. Barbara, Mary, and Myrna did go to school together.
Mm-hmm.
But Patsy and I didn't know each other. And we didn't know Lila because Myrna left after the first,
right.
the second record.
Right.
And I guess he was an older man. You know, he had played with the big band.
Uh-huh.
He knew, nah, I'm going to have problems out of these girls because uh-huh. he couldn't have boyfriends or anything.
Right.
Just had to rehearse. And if he found out you were even thinking about a date, you had to cancel that because we're having rehearsal. He
right.
called a rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
He was serious.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
So you had to be serious about what he wanted to do.
Well,
you know.
I'm serious about this. The fact that I am just overjoyed that I had a chance to spend this time with you and get to hear your thoughts about the crystals. And I really appreciate you spending time with me, and I want to thank you very, very much. And I want to thank you for becoming a good friend. So that's Dee Dee Kinnebrew here on the Harmony Street Show. Thank you ever so much, Dee Dee.
Thank you. Mike, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Okay.
So there you have it, my interview with Dee Dee Kinnebrew of the Crystals. What a sweet, sweet lady. Thank you for listening to the Harmony Street Show. You can email me at harmonystreet@yahoo.com. And why don't you go to my website, www.harmonystreet.biz. This is Mike Miller wishing you a wonderful week. Love you. Keep listening.